What is up, everyone? Chris Manning here from the Locked On Cavs podcast with my co-host, Evan Damrell. Hope everyone had a great Memorial Day weekend. On today's show, we're talking about Lauri Markkanen, continuing the season review series. That's all coming up today.
You are Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast.
All right, the music you heard on the way in, at least in audio form, is from our friends at Astro Radio. Check them out on Apple Music or Spotify. Thank you for making Locked On Cavs your first listen every day. Remember, we are free and available wherever you get your podcast. Today's episode is also brought to you by our friends at Rock Auto. That's amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. I'm Chris Manning, covering the Cavs for places like Diamond Uprocks and SB Nation for the Sword. That man over there in the white void with the white tee is Evan Damrell from Facebook's Write Down Euclid, as well as Face Fear the Sword. Today's show, segment one, the good of Lauri Markkanen. Segment two, the bad of Lauri Markkanen. Segment three, what Markkanen's fit is as we look forward. But Evan, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
I thought we were just going to talk about the good in general. Man, must not be much to talk about. But
Feel like it's a mix. I feel like when we get to like out of the big three, it's a little bit of a mix here. You know what I mean?
No, I agree with that. It's just we stretched Isaac Okoro thin. Maybe that's why we did. But either way, I'm not bad. Did a lot of yard work this weekend, just soaking up the sun. Didn't get any sun whatsoever because I wore sunscreen because I'm a pasty little bitch boy who cooks alive in the heat. But I'm okay, all things considered. How was your extended weekend? Since we're not recording on a Monday afternoon, we're recording on Tuesday first thing in the morning.
Yeah, doing good. We're doing good. We're moving. The weather's nice, and I feel good about the weather not being trash. It feels like we're getting some actual spring as we get into June here in Ohio.
You mean friend of the pod Danny Cunningham gonna have to hit the greens pretty soon?
I may be golf if you're available to golf. We may be doing this next weekend.
I am pretty much unavailable all of June on the weekends because of wedding season.
Also, do you actually golf yet is the other question.
I mean, I don't golf well, but I know how to golf. Okay. I took lessons as a kid, and then like my friends and I would go to driving ranges and stuff, because growing up in bumfuck nowhere, Ohio, you run out of stuff to do pretty quick.
Yeah. Okay. That explains one of your other habits, I would suspect. All right. Evan, the good of Lauri Markkanen.
What habit?
I'll tell you. I'll text you it.
That I like to fish?
Something you did on this podcast, and this is a joke.
That I vaped?
This has gone on too long, Evan. It's gone on too long.
Well, the reason I apologize is because I was not used to the video intros not being here still. My opportunity to take a hit of the dab and no one sees it. But anyways, let's talk about the good of Lauri Markkanen.
Yeah.
So not the bad of my habits.
Yes. So I think all of Markkanen's value last year like really just comes from his role as a floor spacer. Like we'll talk about the defensive part of it, because I think for what he was asked to do, I think he held up fairly well. But 36% on three, 37% on catch and shoot threes, according to NBA.com, you know, was above average for his position as a forward in terms of 3-point percentage, like near the 70th percentile in overall percentage. That, considering this team is playing too big, that Evan Mobley either won't be a shooter or wasn't one last year, that's obviously an open question. Jared Allen's not a spacer. They often played Okoro, who's not really a floor spacer. You know, they play LeVert later in there, who's not a floor spacer. The Cavs don't have a lot of guys that actually can stretch the floor. Markkanen, I think like 95% of his value feels like it comes from the fact that he was like actually a good 3-point shooter at the position and doing the thing the Cavs kind of needed him to do.
I think that's fair. I think it's twofold. Like you said, the defensive stuff is interesting because he had Evan Mobley and Jared Allen covering him on the back line. And so when he was maybe getting kind of killed on the perimeter, at least you had a wall behind him not to worry about so much rim pressure. But you're hitting the nail on the head, at least, because it makes you wonder maybe if they didn't have Larry Marketing, would they have started Larry Nance Jr. at the three at that point? Would they have stuck with Isaac Okoro? Would they have started Kevin Love and gotten really weird with it? Because in order to really make this Allen and Mobley pairing work, and even in Colin Sexton as well, who has the propensity to shoot or the ability to shoot, but he doesn't have the desire to shoot it. He'd rather attack the basket. Having spacing out there makes life easier for those guys. And I think that's like his true value, is just a shooter. And also just the fact that he's so big, the Cavs can command a serious presence on the boards as well. So when one of Mobley or Allen or both of them clean up the shot or like defend the shot very well, and like it creates a rebounding opportunity, you have at least have 3 7-foot bodies out there to try and nab it. So you don't have to worry about maybe getting killed on second chance opportunities as much. So I see his value. It's just, I wonder about the overall fit long-term, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah. I think that the shooting thing is an interesting consideration in this, just because we're at a spot with him where I think that clearly pops, and like his 3-point rate was very high for Cleveland in a way I think it needed to be. So last year, non-corner threes took in the 80th percentile of forwards. 39% of his shots were non-corner threes. Over 50% of his shots overall were catch-and-shoot three-pointers. His diet was very clearly like, we're going to pick and pop, we're going to do catch-and-shoot stuff. Like, his value is very clearly that. He doesn't do a lot of rim rolling. He doesn't really get to the rim very much. He has, like, some drives, but it's not a lot of, you know, stuff where he's really like getting to the rim, for a forward, like it's a little below average for his position in terms of forward. But if you compare it to like bigs, which he's 7 feet tall, he's just a weird guy because he doesn't take a lot of shots at the rim. And it's this weird thing. And it's like so hard to like, he's just such a weird guy to talk about in that sense, because he just doesn't, we said this all year, but he doesn't play like a 7-footer. He plays like he's actually 6'8" or 6'6". Yeah, he plays
even smaller sometimes. Sometimes he plays like he's a guard, where he just, his fundamental skill set, and like, I don't know, I've talked to people about this where like people encourage him a lot, like, hey, you have a guard on a mismatch, you need to bang down low with him and try and post him up and get an easy basket under the basket. And Larry just doesn't have that in his bag necessarily. And it's interesting, but I think, again, just like when you list the statistics of him as a shooter, like that's a healthy part of his diet, that's a healthy part of his repertoire. I think teams have to respect his threat on the perimeter. Either he's going to make them, obviously, or miss them, but like his ability to stretch the floor a little bit, and maybe you can force bigs onto him as well and kind of open up lanes and space and underneath the basket as well that way too. Like, there's different ways the Cavs could kind of approach this long term, but like right now it was weird. It felt like a odd offensive wrinkle that the Cavs wouldn't necessarily stick to all season long, but they did, to their credit. Mm-hmm. And now it's interesting to see kind of how they build off of that, because this is kind of their identity. I wonder if, like, obviously if a starting caliber small forward just fell into their laps, that would shake the dichotomy of things a little bit. Let's say magically Jaylen Brown became available. He's not going to be starting.
That's not happening.
Not now. And maybe earlier in the season when there were reports of the beef that
Gordon Hayward.
Gordon Hayward. So yeah, if you like bring Gordon Hayward in, and we talked about this a little bit, and maybe we can talk about this later on in the week, because Richie Randall was talking about it on Twitter and I shared it with Chris. But if you brought in more of like an actual wing type player, what would you do with marketing them? Would you pull back this, oh, we're going to go big and keep it as an offensive wrinkle? Or would you let Hayward just be your wing off the bench and you stick with Barkin as your starting three? Like, there's a lot of different avenues and paths the Cavs can take from here.
So let me ask you this as we hit the end of this segment. How much, in terms of the way that this structure works, like playing these two 7-footers, these two bigs, forming our identity around them, and then marking in sort of like the third 7-footer. But the Cavs won more games. It largely worked. The lineup data suggests that it kind of worked. How much do you think his spacing actually like meaningfully contributed to that? Like, how much do you feel like Markkanen and the threat of Markkanen and what he actually did actually contributed to that working? I have a hard time. I personally just have a hard time answering that.
I have a hard time answering it too, because there's some games where teams would respect Markkanen on the perimeter and keep a body on him. And then there's other times, because he can be streaky as a shooter sometimes too. But like, it's kind of like having Kevin Love out there. You have to respect Kevin Love as a shooter as well. So maybe you keep a defender within his space, but I give Markkanen some credit, at least on offensively making it work, because it's already hard enough starting two 7-footers side by side. I think having three of them out there where all three of them aren't shooters, where Evan Mobley could be one, Markkanen is one, it makes it semi-functional. And I think it's obviously more of the defensive upside you have with starting Mobley and Allen together. But the spacing that Markkanen at least provides makes it a little more palatable on offense for them. And it's a hard question to answer, because I think I need to see more of it just because of how banged up this Cavs team was. But it's definitely an interesting question, because I'm struggling with it, answering it in real time.
I tend to think he deserves it, like, helps some, but I also think, like, the system and, like, what happened with Garland, I think Garland feeding him and those two bigs covering him defensively, I think, really put him in a position to push it. I think, like, he, like, helps make it work, but they cover for him. They those guys cover for him more than otherwise. And just to end on this,
he can't create his own shot. And his agent shared with me, he's like, Darius Garland and Ricky Rubio are the first time Lar is actually going to be playing with a real point guard in his career. Like, no disrespect to like Kobe White and those guys, he said, but like, this is the first time he's going to have a guy who gets him his shots, because they'll find his spots on the floor for him, because he's not an individual shot creator. He needs somebody to set him up.
Yeah, and just a note, his shooting throughout the year was like a little up and down. We'll talk about that after the break. First, going to tell everyone about our friends at PrizePicks. And again, after the break, Markkanen's kind of inconsistent shooting and some of the struggles, I guess, with him and what he is. But going to tell everyone about our friends at PrizePicks. PrizePicks is daily fantasy made easy. All you have to do is pick 2 to 5 players and an over-under on their projections, and you can win up to 10 times on any entry, and it's just you versus the projected numbers. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that easy. It is safe, and they offer fast withdrawals. You can use the award-winning app on both the App Store and Google Play. PrizePicks offers any prop you can think of, from points scored to rebounds and steals. You can allow mixed, you can do mixed sports entries, and they don't just offer NBA. They have college basketball, college football, NFL, MLB, soccer, MMA, and more. For a limited time, PrizePicks has an exclusive no-brainer offer for all of our users, all of our listeners. New users get $50 for free if a player in your first PrizePicks entry scores a single point, but you need to use the code NBA. That's right. This is an exclusive offer available to Lockdown listeners. Sign up today and use code NBA for $50 free if a player in your first prize pick entry scores a single point. All right, back here on Locked On Cavs. If you want to get a second listen today, check out the Locked On NBA Big Board show. Host Rafael Barlow from NBA Draft Junkies and author of the NBA Big Board newsletter is joined by Richard Stamen, Sam Ferris, Leif Thulin, and others, giving fans an in-depth look into the NBA draft, mock draft, player rankings, and of course, their big boards. It's free and available wherever you get your podcasts. Okay. Evan, market and shooting month over month is kind of an interesting thing. I haven't gone back and like looked at the team's like net rating month over month in this context either, but October, and this is with like pretty similar, like it ranged from like 6 attempts per game as high as 8.2 per game in terms of how many threes he was taking. So October, 28.6%, November 39%, December 27.5%, January 43.5%, February 40.9%, March 33%, and then April 51.5%. So it's a lot of this. Like, there's a little inconsistent. Like, February is only 3 games, April is only 5 games, November, when he took over eight threes a game, was only 5 games. Like, there's a little bit up and down, but this, like, he had a very like up and down kind of year in that sense. So that, and post All Star was like closer to 40%. Pre All Star was at 34%. So definitely was a little better post All Star. I think just to move on to the troublesome, I think the problem, I guess, for him starts in this is it is a problem that this is all he does on offense. I think that is genuinely a problem. Even if it is a little bit alleviated because you have these two bigs, you don't really have room for more guys taking shots at the rim. He is very one note, and I almost like it. The provocative question I would ask here is like, do you feel like Kevin Love was more impactful minute for minute than Markkanen? And I kind of say yes. At least offensively. Defensively, probably. Offensively, I think not. I think offensively, yes. Defensively, no.
Well, for context on those numbers, he did have COVID for a decent stretch where he was out for a while. So like that skews things a lot too. I think him having to learn how to play small forward almost full time alongside 2 7-footers and learn how to find his spots just like as the fourth or possibly fifth banana in the starting lineup, depending on whether or not Colin Sexton was starting with them, definitely changes things for him a bit. I think, like you said, there's post All-Star break, there was like some real raw data that says like, okay, maybe there was something there in terms of his shooting, but he was streaky. That's what I said in the first segment where, yeah, there were times it felt defenses weren't respecting Markkanen because he was so hot or cold from the perimeter. And then there's times he was so hot that teams were committing a defender to him to make sure that he was uncomfortable in space and on the perimeter. But then you have like Kevin Love, who was kind of scorching it from three for the better part of the season this year. That's why he was in six, so strongly considered for sixth man of the year this year. That I think offensively, at least, yeah, I don't think that's that far-fetched that he was more impactful than Markkanen at times. But again, Love also does it in a more limited stretch. He does it in more limited bursts. He's doing it against bench line. I was like, there's a lot of variables in play here. But yeah, I think just if you just look at the raw data and the numbers, you could easily say Kevin Love was more impactful than Lauri Markkanen offensively.
The offensive part of it gets, I think, trickier because Love at least is providing, like, as a point of comparison, their spacing role is sort of, I think, their function. It's similar, but Love provides a little bit of passing. Love at least has a little bit, I think,
he's
not
a better
like
rebounder than Markkanen.
Oh, that's not even a question. But
Kevin Love is like a Hall of Fame caliber rebounder.
Yeah, Lauri Markkanen in terms of defensive rebounding rate, like was like above. Like again, like it, his role is almost like perfect for him because he's covered by these two guys. It's a question of like, is this the perfect thing for those two guys? I think is the way to frame like kind of what he is. And we'll get to that. But like Love, at least on offense, like will provide some passing. He's more comfortable in DHOs. He has the pump fake and step to the side where like he has a move to kind of get his shot off.
That is, and so many people bite on it too.
Yeah,
it's incredible.
But like Lauri Markkanen doesn't have like a pump fake and step to the side. Like he maybe can put the ball on the floor and get a dunk off every once in a while, but it's not like a consistent thing that he can get off against like pretty set defenses. Love has shown a proven ability in this. He's older, like all of that stuff. There are some caveats there, but like Love has shown an ability to kind of make do in I think worse situations at times in that sense. Markkanen is a guy that I think like again has value. I think fit kind of what they needed from that three spot better than their other options. It's just like, what else does he provide anything else? I think is the question. And aside from like staying in front of guys on the first line of defense, he's not really providing a ton on defense. Like he's just not, and doesn't rebound, doesn't get shots to the rim, doesn't finish well at the rim. There's just like, I don't totally always know what he's doing, what he's like actually providing aside from the spacing. He's kind of one note in that way.
I think that's where the Gordon Hayward question comes into play again. We're like, yeah, Gordon Hayward has limited upside because he's in his 30s and has an ability to be injured. But Hayward plays defense. He can shoot. He can provide playmaking. Like, he provides a lot of things that the Cavs need at the three, more so than Markkanen kind of being this. Maybe he's pigeonholed into being more of a one-note, one-dimensional player at times too, just because of how the offense flows and functions. But
I just kind of think it's what he is.
I think it's what he is. Like, there's enough tape on him at this point where like he's not a traditional big man. He can't play the five. Like I had somebody I was reading a YouTube comment the other day. We were talking about needs for the team, just like long term. We were talking about how backup center, and like I made a case for it. Somebody said that Lauri Markkanen could just be the team's backup center because Evan Mobley should just strictly play the four and sometimes the five. And I just kind of raised my eyebrows at that and went on with my day. But Markkanen, like you said, I think it's really smart where he's in the perfect setup where having Mobley and Allen covering him as a backline of defense is perfect for him. But I don't necessarily know if it's perfect for those two long term. But again, this question changes a lot if Evan Mobley becomes like a plus shooter in his sophomore season, or we see like the trajectory of him becoming more of a shooter in his sophomore season. We saw it a little bit towards the end of his rookie year, but we'll see where that goes there. But I think getting a more traditional wing who can provide you more than just shooting, maybe some playmaking as well, is smart. I think that's fair. And then maybe you pencil Markkanen in as your backup, like 3-4, and Kevin Love plays your 4-5, and it's absolutely brutal defensively at times. But I think, as you also said, the Cavs really didn't have a lot of other options because if they wanted to make their two of their best three players work on between Mobley and Allen, you needed somebody who's more of like a better shooter, and Chetty Osmond's too inconsistent. Isaac Okoro just isn't reliable from out there. And the like, and then Lamar Stevens really isn't an option either. Like, and Dean Wade, like, that was just a weird wrinkle the Cavs tried that somehow worked, but there weren't many other options for Cleveland, so they had to think outside of the box and say, okay, we have this big guy who can shoot, who doesn't like to bang down low. Why don't we let him drift on the perimeter and play as our small forward? It makes sense why they start him when you break down the Cavs roster and just kind of how they want to do things. But again, I don't know. That's a tough question. Like, can they do this long term?
I tend to think no, but it's also like Garland.
Like I don't know if it could be their starting five like next season.
Next season is a different question to me than like 3 years from now, because I think
he won't even be under contract 3 years from now.
Yeah, but like if you think about it, like, so if you look at what he is, you could say like, okay, maybe like we keep him and we run this him in Love another year. We look, if there's not an upgrade that presents itself, he takes over the Love like backup four role in a different way. But like Love gets him out of contract, maybe Love moves on, maybe Love retires, whatever. Like he's going to be at a point in his career where like we'll see what he wants and see where he's at. That's a whole other year for now. But if Markkanen's on the roster, then that leaves you questions. And it's just like it is just like I'm looking at the cleaning the glass like lineup data right now. Markkanen's, so Garland, Okoro, Markkanen, Mobley, Allen was plus 10 per 100 possessions. That's really good. Garland, Stevens, Markkanen, Mobley, Allen was plus 13.5 in like much less in like under 200 possessions, but like was plus 13.5 in those possessions. Garland, LeVert, Okoro, Markkanen, Mobley was plus 12.3. The spacing is, I think, like, again, like imperfect, and you're asking other guys to cover for him. And it's not, look, and it's not like him playing the three. It's like he's fighting around Kevin Durant screen. Let's just to say bluntly, like, Kevin, if he's guarding Kevin Durant, Jason Tatum, whomever, they're switching that immediately. They're saying Jared Allen's going to slide up and do this. Evan Mobley is going to slide up and really do the work here. Like, that's built in here.
Would they? Because I watched John Morant and Desmond Bane take turns haunting him. I watched Jason Tatum take turns haunting him. I watched Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant take turns picking him apart.
But I mean, in principle, the general principle is like,
if you force a traditional big man to drag, you force Jared Allen to be dragged out to the perimeter because he's definitely not comfortable defending the perimeter more than Larry Markkanen.
Well, no, like,
it's a fair question as well, though.
Yeah, no, it is a question. The general first read is, set the screen, you switch it, and you try to, what Jared Allen would do is take a step up, and he would try to slide in as quick as he can. What will happen is, and I think you saw this against, I'm explaining this for the listener.
Oh, okay.
You look at the Memphis game, they hunted him in space with wings. You can do weird stuff with that and really hurt him. Or what you will see, let's say they play Boston in the playoffs next year. Let's say they play Miami in the playoffs next year, right? What they will do is they will screen and they will grind the shit out of it and make Markkanen, put Markkanen on an island and Jimmy Butler is going to attack you. Jason Tatum is going to attack you one-on-one and he's going to get cooked there.
Miami's going to have Jimmy Butler and Joel Embiid. So like, it's game over, bro.
Yeah. Markkanen defending the post is some brutal stuff. On a note again, like Markkanen is not, we should just say this explicitly as well. You don't want to like post him up. But he also it's also just like wild that like you cannot throw him the ball. Like the amount of times you would like hear the broadcast be like, yeah, you got to attack the mismatch. Larry Markkanen posting up is a wasted offensive possession. Straight up. A waste of a pass, a waste of a touch. Don't do it. You have to just like carve it out of the diet of the team fully.
Would you rather watch Andre Drummond take a three or Larry Markkanen post up?
I would rather drink a cup of bleach.
All right. With that said, today's episode of Locked On Cavs is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. While you're often pointless or seemingly intimidating questions and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry. You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. You can save time and money when using Rock Auto. It's getting hot out there, and this time 2 years ago, my AC system blew in my beautiful Toyota Camry, and it was going to cost me almost $2,000 out of pocket from the shop. And then Rock Auto sold me the part for $800, and I saved so much money. And they're a family business as well, serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. Rock Auto's prices are reliably low and are for every customer. They have everything you need, from brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. So if you're interested, go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On, and their How Did You Hear About Us box, they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Check them out today at rockauto.com.
Evan, answer your own question before we get into
I'd rather watch Larry Markkanen in the post, because that means Andre Drummond also brought the ball up in transition and just pulled it up from three. So,
I love
me as a big Penguin, but my brother in Christ, he took years off my life during it was already the stress of the weight of the pandemic coming down on me. But watching him and his like final act in the Cavs just really made me a sour puss, to say the least.
Yeah. So, as we look ahead with Markkanen, I think we'll do more on this like later, that we can kind of mapping out like the rotation and such.
It's an interesting question. Like, where do we go from here with Lauri Markkanen? Like, I think we could really like talk about this for a bit. Cause would you trade him? Would you bench him? Would you start him? Like, there's so many different things here.
Yeah. So let's do a Lauri Markkanen fake trade episode later in the week. Let's put that on the books. Let me ask you this. If the Cavs were to say, let's just say they draft. I'll hit the
Locked On group chat up and say, yo, who wants one gently used Lauri Markkanen? Hit us up.
Kings, give us the fourth pick and Harrison Barnes. Yeah, and you'll get that Eastern European you've always wanted. So if you think about Markkanen and you're to say, okay, mm-hmm. he's going to be, let's just assume he's on the roster next year. I think where we'll start in this broader conversation will continue the week. If he's the starting three next year, is that a reasonable place for Cleveland to end up after this summer?
Again, it depends on what they do, maybe on the back end of their roster and on their rotation.
Let's say they take some version of a wing at three, at 14, at their first round pick, but they don't use the MLE on like a. It doesn't seem like that wing's out there, but like they don't like go out and like sign someone to be the three, and they use that money on like backup point guard, backup center, like, and they just kind of largely run the roster back, and the wing addition is the rookie.
God, that's a tough question. There's a lot of tape on the Cavs this playing big, because it sticks with me, because Larry Nance told us on the show, he's like, we didn't even know what the hell we were doing, and other teams didn't know what the hell we were doing. Teams know what the Cavs are doing when they play big. They found the weaknesses, and it's Lauri Markkanen is like the focal weakness in this lineup for them, and like making Evan Mobley uncomfortable with defensive pressure at times too, just because of the fatigue of a rookie season. So obviously they'll come back fresh, but I think it's functional, but it depends on the kind of big you bring in.
You mean the kind of wing?
You said they sign a backup big and a.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
The wing, I would assume, is a rookie wing that either plays spot minutes or seldom plays at all because they're being picked at 14. So like, there's bigger fish to fry. It's a very tough question, because there's just so many uncertainties with the Cavs. Not so many uncertainties, but there's a lot of just things the Cavs need to figure out this offseason, and clearly they are, because they're hosting a bunch of draft prospects at Cleveland Clinic Courts this week for workouts. But there's going to be a lot of questions, a lot of variables at play that the Cavs just need to kind of figure things out. I think I wouldn't consider it a failure. I wouldn't be surprised necessarily, just based on how this offseason goes. But let's say they go get Gordon Hayward somehow. Let's say they package like the trade Richie and Carter Rodriguez were talking about, was Caris LeVert and Jetty Osman as your baseline. You go get Gordon Hayward for that. If you have Gordon Hayward like on the Kevin Love plan and he's like your bench wing, I guess I could understand it, but I would still question it, because again, he's so one-dimensional, and we kind of know who Lauri Markkanen is as a player at this point. I'm struggling with this question. It's just, I don't know. It depends on who the Cavs bring in and who they sign.
I think the way to change this is kind of narrow, because I think it has to be a shooter.
It has to be a shooter. And also like, how does Evan Mobley's clearly going to level up this offseason?
Is it like, is he shooting threes next year? Then this changes the conversation a little bit. But it's
threes, I'm just like, fuck it, start Lauri Markkanen, because Evan Mobley can do anything,
right? But like, if it's okay, it's like the spacing is clearly needed. I don't think you can just be like, okay, we have LeVert, Okoro, Garland, that's enough. Like, and yeah, if like Sexton's back,
the
like
only plus shooter of that group is Garland, because yeah. Sexton would be, but he doesn't like taking threes.
You Sexton's value would have to get turned up. We talked about this when we did.
Has to be on that Gary Trent Jr. diet in terms of like his shot chart. Yeah. He's just bombing from three.
The dial has to get turned. It's like these are questions and possibilities. I think you're right to note that, like, look, the tape is going to be there. Like, there's just more people, like, people that are much smarter than us will, like, dissect this and attack it and find ways to attack this Cleveland defense. They cannot just,
well, I think, like, we saw it in the play-in tournament when it came to, like, Atlanta and Brooklyn kind of just exploiting it.
Yeah, look, like, personnel-wise, running it back can make some sense. I think assuming that you can just run back the exact same scheme stuff is never really going to work. Cleveland's going to have to evolve this in some way to kind of build on this year. That's just where this is headed. So, like, and marketing,
always be dynamic, baby, never static.
And it's the marketing spot as, like, can you get a different kind of spacer who is maybe kind of more traditional and fits kind of cleaner and offers maybe, like, a little bit more. Like, if you could get Bajan, like, Hayward Goodwin, but Bajan Bogdanovic would kind of be, like, another guy
either
to start.
Either Bogdanovic.
Either one, but I think, like, the Utah one maybe is more realistically available and, like, also plays that 3-4 that I think kind of fits with Mobley. Like, there's something to the size as well. Like, the fact that the Cavs, like I said, it wasn't just, like, 3 7-footers. It was 3 dudes who were, like, kind of big. Yeah. And, like there's like, a wall. There's, like, a strength factor to that I think is interesting. I think it seems, like, pretty reasonable that he, like, may start opening night. But, like, if you told me he's not or that it's changed by the All-Star break or, like, whatever.
It's like a shorter leash on the experiment. I wouldn't be surprised. But also, I don't know, man.
The option isn't on the roster now, I think, is the other
thing. That's the thing. It's the same as, like, right now, because I kind of broke this down. Like, in terms of their quote-unquote wings, you had Osman, Okoro, LeVert, or not LeVert at the time. You had Stevens. None of those guys, like, Jetty is just too unreliable. Like, yes, he looked better with Ricky Rubio on the floor, but then you saw him crater again without Ricky Rubio on the floor. If you have him as just, like, a bench wing instead of a starting three, he works a lot more. But Okoro and Stevens at the time, we saw how bad it can look shooting wise when those two were starting next to Mobley and Allen. Like, the spacing is just non-existent for the Cavs.
To end this, let's just, the only other one that quickly comes to mind, and if people are listening and tweet us or YouTube comments or whatever and have different suggestions,
yes, drop us some wings.
But in-house, like, the only other in-house roster change to me that would make some sense in terms of, like, needing spacing would just be, like, to keep some of the, it's one of these two things. If it's not running it back the same starting five, it would be Garland, Sexton, LeVert, Mobley, Allen, or it is Garland, Sexton, Okoro, Mobley, Allen.
Sexton and LeVert would be tough.
Sexton, LeVert, and Garland is, like, asking the world of Mobley and Allen in a way I don't love. So yeah, that leads you to, is it Sexland, Okoro, Mobley, Allen?
Tough.
There's some issues there as well. And it's probably asking Okoro to defend up in a way that it's probably not the maximum use of what he is.
Nope, not at all.
Unless he's, like, added some, like, Mark, unless he, like, if his strength hits another level and he can defend, like, Marcus Smart and that type of, like, sit in the post on guys and do that shit. But that's asking a lot.
He's wired differently, too. It's just, it's okay. Yeah, if he had a level up like that, though, that'd be incredible, too.
That's not really fair. But, like,
it's a good recent example because he's the most fresh viewpoint of, like, a type of player Isaac Okoro could be,
like much worse offensively Marcus Smart. So, like, not Marcus Smart.
I would not trust him playmaking Marcus Smart.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't feel good about any of this, I think, is where we get to. It's like, this just feels like the thing on the roster. There's a big circle.
It's a big, yeah, you circle it and put a question mark in the middle and just say, you take the wait and see approach, I guess. What do the Cavs do this offseason? Because they have a lot of bodies in this rotation too. They may have to consolidate some pieces as well to kind of just iron out some of the issues and deficiencies they have elsewhere. Like, LeVert is on an expiring contract. Larry Markkanen has a desirable skill set, but the last year of his deal isn't guaranteed. Like, Jetty Osman's technically on the last year of his contract. Like, there's a lot of pieces the Cavs could use, picks as well, to position themselves better. And I wonder if Markkanen would be, I mean, it'd be remiss of Cleveland not to consider trading him, but, like, I wonder if he's more available than people may hope, because, yeah, ideally you'd have him slot in as that backup four and then let Kevin Love be, like, the vibe vet guy, but he just makes too much money to do that.
Can't wait to see what the Cavs do with the roster. We'll talk more about Markkanen. We'll do some fake Markkanen trades later in the week. Dave. Might.
He sends me fake trades all the time, like 2 a.m. He's like, I did it. And he sends me like a 10 teamer. And I'm like,
honestly, at 2 a.m., I'm usually having like an anxiety dream because my melatonin's hitting hard.
Bro, I had a wild one last night. So I feel you.
Yeah. All right. Until next time, I'm Chris. Check out our episode with Bill D. Filippo and Dyson Daniels in the feed already if you haven't done that. I hope everyone had a great Memorial Day weekend.
We'll talk soon.
Talk soon. And again, looking forward again to later in the week, our guy, Mac Robinson, joining the show. Can't wait for that. It's going to be fun. Tune in.